Welcome to the Low Rates, High Returns podcast, where we'll uncover the timeless investment principles so you can escape the rat race, earn passive income, and create lasting wealth. I'm Pete Wargent, investor and financial coach, and I'm joined by Stephen Moriarty, private investor and the co-author of our new book, Low Rates, High Returns. In each episode of this podcast, we talk about the crucial concepts around managing your own money, how to invest, when to invest, and the key lessons we've learned along the way about generating passive income. The things we discuss in this episode shouldn't be taken as financial advice, and we recommend you reach out to a licensed professional advisor who can help you with your unique circumstances. Enjoy the show.
G'day, welcome to this week's episode of the Low Rates, High Returns podcast with me, Pete Wargent. I'm here with Stephen Moriarty. G'day, Steve. How's things?
Good, mate. Good. All good here. Starting to warm up a bit. Getting closer to Christmas. So COVID's just about dead, or hopefully.
Yeah, well, certainly Queensland seems to have almost completely evaded the worst of it so far. So fingers crossed that stays the same. So today's episode, we're just going to do a bit of a recap on some of the lessons that we've learned so far from our From the Experts series. So we've had half a dozen guests on so far. And part of the thought process behind this series was to get some experts on in specific areas of investing and try and summarize the two or three key lessons or takeaways from each of them. And I was just saying to Steve before we came on, I like to try and come away with some lessons or learnings, as people say these days, from each. So why don't we just run through them, Steve, and then we can summarise our key takeaways from each.
You fire off, mate, and we'll go from there.
Let's start first up with Con Mitchellakis, who's the CIO at State Super. So obviously it's a bit different for somebody who's a super fund manager or somebody who works for one of the big institutions, because you're managing very large sums of money there. I think probably the key takeaways I learned from speaking with Con is, well, firstly, they almost by definition have to be very systematic in what they do. And I think having a system to follow is important. I think Con, his view is you shouldn't try to predict too much, just follow the investment system or approach that you want to stick with. And also an interesting discussion on there on the concept of rebalancing. So basically taking some gains off the table when you've had some good results and then feeding those gains into other investments, which is, I guess, something that the pros will always do, Steve.
There was a couple of things that sort of a little bit surprised me, not about Con, but where I sort of thought, I've got a bit of a different view on that. But generally, I sort of thought we were in fairly well good accord. What you said, you know, be systematic, don't try and predict it too much and rebalance. There was one point that stuck with me, and I think it was about that, how you do your asset allocation and, you know, the bands that they sort of work in. And I thought that was interesting in terms of rebalancing. And I think this is also specific in some senses to super, you know, managing a, you know, billions of dollars, which Con does. And it's a little bit more nuanced, I think, in terms of your target allocations. And, you know, so if something went from 40% to 47%, and it was, you know, the limit was 45 or something, then you have to start looking at paring it back and that sort of stuff. I thought overall that was really useful to hear from someone who manages an absolute, you know, a bloody big bucket of money. Because as we know with Buffett, the bigger you get, the more money you get, the harder it is to be nimble. And so you've got to be a bit more systematic in your approach. And also, too, like you said, Con's second point about don't predict, because you basically got to take an extremely long-term point of view about whether it's good or bad, because you can't be nimble enough to slip out here and then duck back in there and, you know, that sort of thing. So I thought that was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, it probably applies to individuals as well, but maybe for a different reason. When you're starting out, you haven't got that much money under your own management, so to speak. So you can afford to be nimble and take a few risks and so on. But as your wealth increases, quite often for a lot of people, your tolerance for taking a big hit then decreases. So you do need to have a more systematic approach, I guess, as your wealth increases, because you've got more to lose. And obviously, as people go through life, they tend to have more commitments as well in terms of families and mortgages and so on. So probably going to be less nimble as you progress through your journey, and you need to take a more systematic approach. Of course, you can always set aside some money for different ventures or whatever, but the overall portfolio you need to manage in a more systematic way. So Peter Simpson Morgan, who we interviewed, obviously once very well known in funds management and stockbroking with Perpetual, and then subsequently doing his own thing. So I think the key takeaways there, really interesting guy and really interesting interview. And we've caught up with Peter before for lunch down in Sydney. I think the key things I took away from that is he comes quite from the old school, really, about understanding what you're actually investing in. I think there's a lot of people these days become a bit disassociated with what they're actually investing in. So he thinks you should understand that companies, especially if you're venturing overseas, you need to be a bit careful about understanding what you're actually putting your money into. But I think the main thing I took away from Peter, and that's somebody who's been in markets for decades, is that he said, well, for one thing, he's not fully invested, and you don't need to be fully invested all the time, because once you're managing your own money, you want to protect your downside. And he said, look, if you're in your 40s or something, you'll probably get 4 or 5 more huge opportunities when the market's completely on its knees, and then you can really swing for the fence. I think that was probably the biggest takeaway, I think, of all of the interviews that we did, Steve.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, talking to Peter, particularly because, as I said, not coming from a finance industry background, I was really interested to hear, the old days, so to speak, because it was just, like when he talked about driving around and going to see companies and, those sorts of things, where they still do it today, but it's just a little different because we've got the digital and the technology and all that sort of stuff, and the market moves a lot quicker, and he talked about how, you'd have to wait till the end of the day to put your orders in and all that sort of stuff. But, as he sort of mentioned, Peter Lynch, that type of investing, the biggest difference I found between myself and Peter is he's much more of a fundamentalist investor. Like you were saying, your first dot point, you've got to understand what you're investing in. I've always been a little bit more lax on that front, and I don't say that as a good or a bad thing, but just sort of, I can't remember the last time I read an annual report, which would probably shock Peter greatly. But, that idea about building a deep knowledge base about particular industries or companies, and I think what I would argue is Peter's competitive advantage, that he has a deep well of experience and knowledge, not only about the investments he invests in, but also about the industry and the way it operates. So he's a sort of ex-insider, and that's been really valuable to, I think, the way he manages his money. I was really pleased when he said, he was about 50% cash, because they're the sort of things, from my perspective anyway, when you hear people that you respect in the industry have the, a little bit of the same sort of line, that's when you sort of think, okay, well, that makes me feel like I'm on the right track, so to speak.
Yeah. I think as Peter said, he said, well, it's actually different being a fund manager versus an individual. He said as a fundee, you might be working within certain constraints and you might have to be invested a certain amount or an allocation. But he said as an individual, rightly or wrongly, you don't have to be following the same constraints. And as he said, his focus shifted to not losing money, protection of capital, in the knowledge that he will get big opportunities at various points in the cycle to really invest hard. On to the next, Gareth Brown from Forager Funds. So really interesting insights there into how they would go about the idea of looking for value style investments. And as the name Forager implies, you know, look far and wide, whether it's in Australia or Europe or elsewhere. I think one of the things that was interesting to hear there, the portfolio turnover was actually quite a lot quicker than you might expect for what you term a value style of investing. So Gareth pointed out there that they wouldn't necessarily hold an investment for the very long term, even if it was bought cheap. So intuitively, I like the idea of investments I can buy cheap and then just hold on to for the dividend stream for the long term. But it seems in the fund management world these days that if the investment has some good results in the first 2 or 3 years, they might quite quickly peel it off and move on to the next, which was an interesting insight into how funds management can work.
Again, I'm going to say this for everyone, of course. I enjoyed all of them because I, you know, really enjoyed learning some stuff out of it that, again, and what you and I were sort of talking before about off air beforehand was you learn things that you haven't contemplated, and it's sort of like, oh, that's an interesting point of view. Yeah, I need to have a think about that. And I think that as an investor is the most important thing to say. That's, you know, the idea of disconfirming evidence, you know, like, oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. That's interesting. But I also thought that it was funny because I thought the name Forager was really correct in the way they actually foraged for investment. And it struck me as, unlike myself, where I tend to stick to the bigger end of town because it's, you know, dividend friendly and safer and that sort of stuff, Gareth and Steve really do the whole spectrum. And I always think that's very admirable because, you know, what works for a small company in Italy, which is what we're sort of talking about, works differently to, you know, Woolworths. And so you've got to be both a generalist at the macro level and a specialist at the micro level. And I thought the stuff about how they sort of foraged investment and how they thought about it, as in, you know, what's the catalyst? And I think also we talked about what the, you know, what do you see, or what does Gareth and Steve see that the market doesn't see or hasn't priced in yet? And I think that's a real value perspective. Value investors forage around for the sort of the things that are less popular. You know, the liquidity might be a little bit lower, but there's a really big upside in terms of an asymmetrical bet.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's the old price versus value question, and it doesn't necessarily matter where you find that discrepancy. They will basically seize on those opportunities and look for the mispricing, I guess is the phrase I was grappling for there. Liam Short, who we spoke to, self-managed super fund coach. Interesting discussion there about who should think about managing or self-managing their super. We talked a lot about how to self-manage, and also Liam showed some interesting examples of where people might have a specific industry edge or knowledge, like investing in different asset classes and so on. One of the things I always think when it comes to something like a self-managed super fund or accounting or taxes, you know, you really just need to speak to the experts because the rules are always changing. Things like contribution caps and tax rates and all of that stuff. It's an endlessly movable feast. And I think it's just important to have the right team of experts around you rather than trying to keep abreast of every rule. And I think probably the most interesting thing, especially as I sort of move into middle age, is starting to think about what is the end game for a self-managed super fund. Because I think you spend a lot of time building the assets, but probably a lot of people aren't thinking too much about, okay, well, when do I wrap it up? When can I access those funds? And then what do I do with that money at that point?
I was thinking Liam was almost doing himself a disservice by sort of saying to people, you know, there's certain asset classes, or, you know, he was reciting stories of like, if I don't think they're a fit, then I don't tell them, yeah, sure, I can help you, pay me money. You know, I think he was being very honest there about helping people through the process. And also the other one was, like you said at the start there, it's really, really important that you, when you get an expert, you get a really good one that gives you some insight where, particularly as you know, Pete, in the money game, you don't want to buy a property and then go, oh, actually, I should have used Pete Wardsett because I just bought the wrong property for, you know, $1 million or something. And that's why I'd say that experts are really valuable because they can give you an edge rather than, oh, well, an edge over everybody else. But in this case, Liam was really good at sort of saying to people about, you know, the issues with property in a self-managed super fund or with stocks or, you know, and he talked about one investment. I can't remember what it was, but it was one that had a really good return, you know, that he put his clients into, which I, in my self-managed super fund, I would have never thought of, you know. I thought, oh, I should, you know, do that. So I thought that was really interesting. Because I'm sort of a bit obsessive or one-eyed about stocks, I tend to just go, oh, well, no, it's just stocks for me. And, oh, yeah, that's a good return, but I don't care. I'm just a stocks guy. So I think that sort of opened my mind a bit to saying, actually, I should actually broaden my horizon a little bit and think about alternative, generally, you know, different types of investments. It, as I said, it was a really good point where he was basically saying, here's where he can add value to people who want to manage their self-managed super fund. Because, you know, in our courses, we sort of say to people, you know, you should manage your own money because of the three C's. And I think he put another point to that where we talk about the three C's, and then he was a guy that you could talk to the three C's about in detail. You know, you and I can say, oh, you know, you manage your own funds and it'll save you money and, you know, you can choose where you want to invest and stuff. But Liam is a guy who you would go to and then he would help you implement the three C's.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you pointed out there, I mean, at least half of the value might be in just avoiding dumb mistakes, because you see this, as you know, when we get clients come on board, and, you know, it's very rare that people have a smooth journey through their investing life. And often half the battle is avoiding those big mistakes, especially with things like off-the-plan property, which self-managed super funds and, well, super funds in general, there's been people hovering around that space taking commissions for years, and it can take a long time to unpick a big mistake. And an expert like Liam can just guide people away from some of those traps. So, yeah, I mean, it's very, very valuable service, and somebody who just knows the sector inside out. So probably of the people we've interviewed today, probably the most contentious and potentially interesting, Alan Edmonds of Crouching Tiger Hidden Growth, so small cap stock investor. So I think this is interesting because I get a lot of people message me and say, well, you can't do this and you can't do that, and there's only one way to do things. And as Alan has shown over the years with his newsletters and his returns, there's no question that people can beat the market, but you have to do something different from everybody else. And one of the interesting things Alan said in the interview there was, you know, he doesn't put all of his money into small caps. You know, he needs to be careful in case he has a brain fade or something. So he's got his houses paid off, somebody else manages his super, but then outside of his super, he does small caps, and that's where he finds his edge. And he said, you know, he read that Buffett said he could make 50% per annum by looking at the smaller end of town if he was managing a smaller pool of money. And that sort of led him to go down this route of detailed market research, keeping a lot of records, and then finding ways basically to bet when the probabilities or the odds are in your favour. And very interesting takeaway there. He said that quite often the best results that he's seen is where he's taken money off the table once he's got a three or four bagger, instead of trying to hold on for the very long term. And that's just based on his, you know, research of his historical investments. But clearly, he's found a system of thinking in probabilities. They're looking for bets with asymmetric bets, essentially, where there's more upside than downside, and some fantastic results over time.
It's funny because Alan and I always sort of joke about each other's tweets, you know, on Twitter, smart-ass comments and replies and stuff. So, I really enjoyed it because it's different to what I do. And I really admire people who can do small caps because I'm not very good at it. I'm good at big caps, but I'm not very good at small caps. I suspect the reason why I'm not very good at it and why Alan is good at it is because he does that, again, a little bit like Peter Simpson Morgan, he does that research which fleshes out the competitive advantage. And again, a little bit like Gareth from Forager, can see that there's a value that's unappreciated that he can capture in the future. I've never been a detailed enough guy to, you know, go right into the guts of a company. I might go right into the guts of an industry, but I will then look at a few companies and go, yeah, right, okay, that'll do me, and in I go. Whereas I think Alan does a bit more than that, and I thought that was a really good interview to get a guy who sort of similar to us and Peter Simpson Morgan manages their own money, and we all sort of do it a little bit differently. And so it was like you were sort of saying just at the start there, you know, that you tend to sort of think, and I must admit you and I have said this, that you tend to sort of think there's one way to make money in the stock market, and generally everybody who makes money goes, well, you've got to do it my way. And that's why, as I've said before ad infinitum, you know, we teach principles because that's the way you can apply them to small caps or medium caps or large caps or macro or micro. So I like to sort of think we've got something in common with each of the speakers. I think it's a little bit like I always remember this story about a guy talking about the different religions. You know, and he said, oh, you know, they're always fighting and carrying on. And the guy said, they may do that, but the Pope and, you know, his equivalents in other religions or the theologians, they all get along famously. And it's because they're talking at a higher level. And I don't mean a higher level as in superiority, but they're talking about principles rather than getting down in the, you know, the nitty-gritty of companies and that sort of thing. So that was what I really enjoyed about Alan. And it was, I hadn't heard the way Alan invested before in his methodology, and that's what I really enjoyed because, it, again, as I said, it gives you these things where you go, oh, shit, you know, that's a really interesting way to look at it. You know, I hadn't thought about that. And so I toddled off and, you know, had a think about it. You know, where he said, like you said, he takes three or four baggers, you know, and that's along the lines of what we sort of say to people with, you know, you don't have to buy and hold every investment. You can buy and sell. And again, Alan talked about Buffett making 50%, you know, by buying investments and selling them. You don't have to buy them and then just go brain dead on them and leave them for the rest of your life. You've got to turn them over. And that's how you... I was saying to someone the other day, you know, there's two Warren Buffetts. Warren Buffett got rich by buying and selling stock. He stays rich by buying and holding a majority of his stock. So there's two different Buffetts. And I think Alan's methodology brings that out really well.
Yeah. And well, you mentioned the key point. A lot of the same principles of the eight principles that we teach go all the way through this. So obviously, Alan has a very systematic approach, which is one of our eight principles. I think the personality point is an important one because people like you and I, Steve, realistically, we're not going to sit there reading every ASX release and every annual report. You know, and you just have to recognize that about yourself. I think sometimes people try and kid themselves that they're a detailed value style investor or whatever it is, but they don't actually do the work. You know, that's where the personality part of the Enneagram assessment that we talk about, that's where that comes in. Alan's someone, you know, he's got a method. He keeps detailed records and does a lot of research. The style fits his personality. And, you know, people are often skeptical about the ability of people to outperform the market because, you know, I suppose they've read papers about it, you know, fund managers not outperforming. And so, well, look at the results. And also, you know, when you, Alan mentioned that he was considering being a professional gambler, well, those people who can beat the totes or get exceptional returns from gambling or whatever else, I mean, they're the people who have an ability to think in terms of probabilities and just stack the odds in their favour. And they, you know, I guess the proof is in the pudding, so to speak.
It's a good point, you know, because it brings me back to the Kelly criteria, you know, and the stuff where you have to think about the probabilities and the odds and the returns and, you know, those sorts of things. And as you say, if you end up beating the racetrack or beating the casino, professional gamblers, they don't read much about the casino, but they know a hell of a lot about poker, you know. So it's, again, a little bit of a different strategy. But the whole thing about all of our guests, I think, is that ability to think and think through things, you know, whether it's an annual report, whether it's a macro issue about, you know, demand in certain areas, all of those sorts of things. And like you said about asymmetric bets, you've got to put them all together into a sort of coherent or a systematic approach that you can use not once, but use, you know, for 100 investments over your lifetime.
Yes, yeah. And in fact, the other principles do apply as well there. So obviously buying low and selling high, and in particular the point of rebalancing, it's not much use finding a 3 or 4 bagger and then giving all of the gains back. So the principles do flow through all of these different investment styles. Finally for today, Jordan Alizio, who's well-known in gold circles, currently working at head of investment research at Perth Mint. So I think some of the takeaways from Jordan, who's a great guy, by the way, I've known him in the industry for many years. So he talks a lot about gold as a hedge. We talked a little bit about how you can invest in gold companies versus physical gold, but obviously gold companies, there's a different, potentially less reliable because there's other stuff going on at a company level, whereas physical gold is obviously, it's invested in by people for the security and as a hedge. I think it's an interesting time for gold because, as he has mentioned on social media this week, tweets and articles about gold get a sort of a modest level of response. At the moment, everybody's talking about cryptocurrencies and alternative styles of investments. But I guess, as in all asset classes, these things come and go in waves.
Yeah, I think so. I really enjoyed Jordan's where we talked a bit about history of gold, you know, and that sort of thing. I thought that was quite interesting. I own gold in terms of a physical gold with an ETF, and I own a gold company. Again, yeah, your point about the hedge was is because, you know, gold is generally uncorrelated with stocks. It's a really great hedge, but it's a long-term hedge. And the other thing I think is that, again, it's one of those things that it's different to a company because a company can grow its earnings. And I think gold is much more of a circle in the sense of cyclical, that the price is low, then it goes high, then it crashes, then it goes up again. So it's more reflective of the whole stock market rather than of companies themselves. So I thought that was a really good one. I've never been that interested in gold. And Jordan helped me after we talked to him. I sort of thought, oh, you know, there's some really interesting points there. I should look into it a little bit further as a more active strategy rather than just saying, oh, well, I'll throw 5% in my money in gold and that'll be my hedge sort of thing. So I thought it was a good way to stimulate my mind anyway, in thinking I need to probably find out a little bit more about gold because I think I've been a bit ignorant, like, oh, yeah, gold, it's not stocks. Yeah, righto, who cares sort of thing.
Yeah, there's definitely the market cycle within gold as well, though some of the old norms maybe seem to have broken down a bit recently, but maybe that's because we're looking with a too shorter term of focus. So I think, as you said, excellent lessons from all of the people we've interviewed so far. And for the remainder of the series, we're going to cast the net a little bit wider, a lot of very sort of specific investment styles that we've covered. But the rest of the Meet the Expert series, we're going to discuss some new subjects with some different people. So looking forward to the rest of the series, Steve.
Yeah, cheers, mate. I've really enjoyed this. I think the audience with the feedback we've got is pretty good too. So they're probably sick of listening to you and I.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's good as well to get different perspectives because, as we've pointed out many times, there's different personality types out there, and there's lots of different ways to make money, and it's about finding the one that suits you best.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've got another few people in the pipeline I think a lot of our listeners will find really enjoyable. I know I will, so hopefully they will as well.
Yeah, cheers. That's part of my goal for this series, is to come away with a few personal lessons and learnings as well. So thanks for joining this week, and we look forward to joining you next week for the remainder of the Meet the Experts series. Cheers.
Cheers, everyone.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you want to know more, you can download a free chapter and extra bonuses from our new book, Low Rates, High Returns. Just visit www.lowrateshighreturns.com/book to download your free copy. The things we've discussed in this episode shouldn't be taken as financial advice, and we recommend you reach out to a licensed professional advisor who can help you with your unique circumstances. Stephen and I are both on LinkedIn and Twitter, so do reach out and connect with us. And finally, it'd be great if you could subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps others to find the show. Now take care and invest wisely. Cheers.